Hannah, would you like to add something before we leave?
Yeah, I just gonna add we'll be
Si
tabling there.
quería.
We'll be sitting there tabling. We'll be tabling and also hopefully have, like a little drawing there, for everybody that shows up, have a prize there. So because we want to promote, because next month or that this come this month now, we'll be starting to plan the event now. And I'm happy to announce that Bob Tom will be our announcer again. So that's the main part where I worry about is our announcer, our MC. So, but yeah, so continue to follow the Facebook. And I know on our Facebook pages is we have a movie matinee that is no longer, I have to have somebody put a cancel on there because we ended our winter or our winter matinee or Saturday matinee, our moving days, because winter is over and this it's better to get outside than sitting inside. But we'll be starting that up again when the winter comes. But right now we're just focusing on the Indigenous People's Day now, and I'm just tabling there and trying to connect with everybody because, we want to let everybody know that we're going to be doing this, and our second newsletter is going to be coming out not this week, but possibly by the end of next week, our second edition of our newsletter.
Thank you so much, Hannah. We will be saying goodbye. I want to thank you again for your participation, and thanks to you, this program is we can make this happen. Thank you so much. This is Carmen Garcia. Till next
Thank you,
time.
Carmen.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Ear to the streets, ear to the streets, ear to the streets, ear to the streets.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the streets.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. Today's show comes from KPFA in Berkeley, California. La Juana Bajita is a show at KPFA that celebrates the life, love, and social justice of Indigenous people and Indigenous descendants, Mexicanos, Chicanos, and Latino Americanos. Here is Sara Blanco, one of their producers and reporters.
Invisible Epidemic, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women.
The producers hope that you listen and decide to learn more about this terrible epidemic that does not get spoken about much.
We celebrate all of the positive and revolutionary changes that are happening. We'll be addressing the fight back against gender and sexual violence, specifically by paying our respects toward all Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples who have gone missing or have been murdered. They're affected by these terrible crimes in disproportionate numbers across the United States, in Canada, and beyond. Yet this epidemic seems invisible. Today we share stories of people trying to end these crimes. This is a collaboration between Morningstar Gali, Pitt River Tribal Member, Sovereign Bodies Institute Board Member, and myself, Sara Blanco, Mexicana, Ichicana, and ally. Note, we'll be referring respectfully to missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls as MMIWG or MMIW interchangeably. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention listed murder as the third leading cause of death among American Indian and Alaska Native women. According to the National Crime Information Center, 5,712 cases of Native women were reported missing in 2016 alone, but only 116 of them were logged in the Federal Missing Persons Database. But it isn't always public information, and it seems to me that passionate researchers have to start at square zero, work backwards, identifying cases they can corroborate. Less, like Sovereign Bodies Institute, known as SBI, they're checking to see what governmental and local police data actually exist. We will recite a lot of statistics throughout, and I'm the first to admit that beyond the heinousness and the sadness that I feel, there's also a lot of confusion. All this data is just the beginning of what is known, but the following exponential rates are alarming. So far in their research, SBI has identified 134 documented cases. Even with this number of cases, over half have occurred within the past 3 years. The rate of MMIWG cases increased by approximately 20% each year. Then in 2016, the rate of cases was over 10 times as much as before. And in 2018, the rate jumped by 250%. That's a 850% increase. What is going on? We had a chance to speak with Bernadette Smith. She's a traditional Native dancer and also part of Earth First Environmental Group, where she works to protect tan oak trees and to protect the acorn collection sites. Bernadette tells us her personal story.
My sister Nicole Smith, she was murdered on November 19th of 2017 in my home on the reservation. I didn't really know too much about the MMIW coalition until this happened to my sister. And then another girl named Khadijah Britton from the same area, not the same reservation, but she came up missing a month after my sister. And I seen that with the small limited resources in our county from the sheriff's department to work on cases, they told me that they had to stop working on my sister's full time because of the other girl who went missing. So this started making me think about how the situation can be better, or the things that I needed to do to raise awareness to this situation and the limited resources that we have here, and the importance of having those resources available for when this happens in Native country.
Shockingly, SBI cites that of the 134 cases, only 6 have information on alleged perpetrators available to the public, and only one of those has actually been charged. This following portion of Bernadette's testimony is graphic and sensitive in nature. Bernadette felt comfortable enough to share the timeline of the day her sister was murdered as it relates to police response.
So I called the police around 5:45 a.m. and you know, I had 6 children, all under the age of 12, 2 teenagers, and 4 adults were in the house. One of the children, who was 15 years old at the time, was shot as well, my niece Star Brightman. So she's been shot. My sister Nicole is laying on the floor, and I have all these little children laying on the floor. I call the police. They're asking me, what's going on? Is my sister breathing? No, don't move her. And we live in a rural area. You know, most reservations are out in the middle of nowhere. We don't have any on-site police departments like other reservations. So the police didn't come till about 6:30. Yes, and they made my niece, who was shot, walk down the street, the main highway, to come because the ambulance wouldn't enter the reservation. Meanwhile, my sister is losing her life right before my eyes. I'm telling the operator, I'm going to put her in the car myself if nobody hurries up. I called back about 4 times asking where they were. We didn't know if anybody was going to come back in, if the shooting was done, if they were going to come back. Luckily, my parents lived 3 houses away, and I had 2 of the adults actually in the house get the kids together and run them across the street to get out of the house in case the shooters came back. So, you know, I stayed there by myself with my niece who was shot and my sister who was shot waiting for help for an hour. It was really traumatic and it was really hard. So luckily, even in that situation, my niece shot, I had her burn this special root that we burn when we pray, angelica root. And I grabbed my clapper, which is an instrument we use when we sing. And I sang a prayer traveling song because I knew she was already dead. So I had time to do that before the police came, before they ripped her away from the last time I got to touch her. And I went to a number of different sheriff town meetings because they were talking about a response time, well, not specific to the reservation. But I told him, well, you're saying that, you know, you have this 15 minutes response time. Well, how come when my sister died, it took an hour for somebody to come? Not just the ambulance who's 5 minutes down the road, but the police. Where does that leave us? Hopeless, helpless. There was a number of children there. If my mom didn't live so close, we would have all been sitting there. My nephew would have watched his mom die. And I'd like to understand that it's not because it was on the reservation. I want them to show me that I'm wrong. Because in my eyes, and it's easy, the more you read about these things with the MMIW and the police and them excluding natives from the protection that we are supposed to have, just as a people, not even as a native community, but just as part of a community. It's easy to get wrapped up in that hate that, oh, well, this is only because we're Indian that you did this to us. And believe me, I was in that state for a long time, mad at everybody, asking for these answers from the sheriff's department and wanting to know these answers so that they can prove me wrong. I don't want to feel hatred. I don't want to feel unsafe. Thinking because I'm a Native woman that I'm not going to be protected.
The Sheriff's Department has suggested that Bernadette herself is withholding information that could crack the case, a charge that Bernadette denies.
Even if that was true, why haven't they asked me in over a year? And they took me from my sister's funeral. They came to the funeral and walked me out to come interview at the police station. You know, I had to leave my sister's funeral for 2 hours, and I was the one officiating the whole thing.
Bernadette continued to provide any information she could think of to the sheriff, but they seemed more bothered and annoyed than thankful.
So I told my mom, I was like, you know what, Mom? They don't want nothing. They're saying we're messing up the case, giving them reasons. And my mom was like, no, give me the phone. Like, she didn't want to mess up that. And I go, Mom, they don't care. Sorry to tell you that, Mom, but that's what it is.
In addition to the treatment that she has received by the Sheriff's Department, she has been asked to leave the reservation by her own tribe.
I was kicked out by my tribe, out of my home, me and my children. And the only way that I've been able to understand and try to maintain a healthy lifestyle for me and my children is through our traditional songs and dances that I have been lucky enough to be raised in strongly. So I totally give all credit to the Creator for giving us these songs and dances to help me be strong for my children and for my parents, and to not hold any negative feelings toward my people who threw me out because of what happened. So I definitely understand that our songs are very powerful and our dances are very powerful. And I've been able to continue on doing and practicing those things because of my faith in our practices and in our traditional ways.
Hey.
Oh!
You just listened to a prayer by Bernadette Smith with Clarence Carrillo. We wish to thank Bernadette Smith and her loved ones for the testimony and the bravery. Wishing you healing and peace, Bernadette. Earlier we mentioned Khadija Britton. She is still missing. One bit of good news is the Sheriff's Department does now use WeTip, an anonymous line to call if you have any information that can help Khadija or other victims of crime.
From grief and negligence, I guess I handle pain with elegance, but I'm screaming, when is enough?
Here's a song for us, played by special permission, with a title we can shout from the rooftops, Don't Count Me Out by Kalina Lawrence featuring Desiree Hart and DJ Luke.
Current and the in-between, from age 3 all the way to age 18, ward of the court, without a soul to trust, whole family's lost, then forced to readjust, now 24, yes my knees buckle, I must alleviate these red struggles, addiction, poor health, jail and suicide, these things are killing my people nationwide, addiction, poor health, jail and suicide, these things are killing my people, genocide, no more surviving.
You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots. Today's show, Invisible Epidemic, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women.
We move now to talk about the Sovereign Bodies Institute, SBI. SBI is strongly committed to upholding the sovereignty of all bodies Indigenous peoples hold. Sacred physical bodies, nations, land, and water. And they do not accept grants from colonial governments or extractive industries. And they are not limited by colonial borders. SBI is the home of the MMIW database, which is attempting to log cases of MMIWG and Two-Spirit peoples from 1900 to the present. We spoke with Karina Bañuelos, the MMIW database specialist. In her interview, she references 506 cases. These cases are from a report by the Urban Indian Health Institute, UIHI, that has detailed research in 71 urban cities. The author of it is Anita Lucchese, the executive director of SBI. Anita and Karina keep the research moving forward. Here, Karina starts by explaining why the central database is needed.
Well, for one, to get an accurate number of MMIW that we can use for broader advocacy efforts. As it stands now, I think there was 506 missing and murdered Indigenous women that were identified across 71 different cities. And even so, of those 71 cities, that's still not a complete picture of how many MMIW there exist. Now, for one, this could be because there's misidentification after the fact, or the prosecution ruled it as something else. A lot of the times we'll end up seeing that it was ruled a suspicious suicide, and there will be a lot of other narratives that indicate that this person died in a different way. So it might be even just the cause of death being misidentification of the victim, whether they be classified as multiracial or other with no specification, or wrongfully labeled as Hispanic or Latina as opposed to being Native, or being read as white as opposed to having a tribal affiliation there. And there's a lot of little pieces of the puzzle that we're trying to piece together. And we're only hoping that within our collaborations with other folks that are doing this work, creating their own archives to at least have the names of these women be honored in this way, that we can generate more of an accurate picture of this epidemic that's happening from the tip of Canada to the tip of Chile, right? Because this issue, it's across the board. It's everywhere as we know it. And it's interesting that although everywhere is Native land, we have yet to truly understand the levels of violence that exist for Native people contemporarily.
I asked Karina, what reason or reasons, if any, can be attributed to why there are so many of these crimes against Indigenous women?
To put it bluntly, it's colonialism. This is just kind of a long-standing trajectory of history, and we're seeing just kind of its ever-evolving nature to continue to destroy communities. We have the proximity to man camps that a lot of pipelines and other settler-based projects that infiltrate Indigenous territory as a means to extract natural resources. And yet, you know, we see higher rates of violence, all of this added money that goes into protecting a border that puts these false divisions between the entire continent, or the connection of continents for that matter, is just a continuous divide and conquer tactic. And so when it comes to MMIW in particular, we're having to assess the different levels of colonialism that exist, not just internally within our communities, and how we see higher rates of interpersonal violence amongst, you know, Native men or Native people against Native women and Two-Spirit and trans folks, but also just the violence that also comes forth with non-Native perpetrators against Native women, Two-Spirit, trans, and queer folks.
As missing and murdered Indigenous women are not often featured in the media, I asked Karina why she thinks that might be the case.
I honestly think it's a variety of things. I mean, generally, the lack of regard for particularly Black and Indigenous lives, and even more so for Black and Indigenous women, a lot of our issues are always seen in the backdrop of white women's issues. That's not just a historical problem, but it's also a contemporary one. The same way that we have this hypervigilance for ensuring the safety of white women is because we've normalized them as a citizen worthy of protection. And in the same sense, we don't allocate that same kind of fervor, the same kind of protection, and the same kind of honoring that we do when we have missing and murdered Black and Indigenous women. Even more so when they're on the fringes of society and don't necessarily identify with binary gender. So we're talking anybody who is Two-Spirit, queer, trans. If there's no centralized way for other people to care about our struggles and the fights for our lives, then of course, if we're not given that same kind of intensity to look and find and search and hold our representatives accountable, and being adamantly against the capitalist system that allows exploitation of land, that also correlates to MMIW in the region and higher rates of violence against women, particularly Indigenous women, then of course, it would make sense that no one would know about our struggle.
I asked Karina about her specialty with SBI, focusing on Mexico and Latin America.
Because I particularly focus on MMIW south of the border, I've seen a lot of increased amounts of femicide happening, particularly in Mexico, even after the fact that they instituted a gender alert. In about 80 different municipalities in 11 states that have a gender-based violence alert that it's supposed to notify citizens around the area when a femicide occurs. Like, for example, since 2005, more than 1,700 women have been murdered, and at least about 4,281 have gone missing. And a huge chunk of those that have gone missing have never been found. So there's an issue when it comes to the follow-through of these investigations from law enforcement, and that in Mexico in particular, there'll be a whole bunch of mass graves. And even with this gender alert, we're seeing that it actually isn't making much of a change at all in the rates of MMIW in the region, or in the rates of femicides for that matter. If anything, they're increasing. So there needs to be more of a direct action to tangible change that can allow for actual accountability to happen. There was a lot of coverage that was happening in the 90s and the early 2000s, and then again around like 2010, about the different hotspots of femicide. For a while, it used to be in Ciudad Juarez, which is by Chihuahua, the border town next to El Paso. And that was more of a hotspot after NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was passed in the 90s, and having an influx of lower income, primarily Indigenous women, come up to be maquiladoras, or working in these sweatshops that in of itself had really ridiculous hours. And the municipality would try to create a curfew system that, you know, if you were out after this time that you would get penalized, but a lot of the maquiladoras that would work really late wouldn't be able to get out at the time of curfew. So it was in of itself like a self-perpetuating disaster just waiting to happen, in that we knew about all of these things beforehand, and yet when the government is slow to react to ensure to protect their most vulnerable, we see these increases in violence happening. And it's moved, not just from there, but to the state of Tamaulipas, again, to the outermost parts of Mexico City. And so with these gender alerts, we're really hoping that there is some change that ends up happening, but you know, this is one effort of many in Latin America to try to take care of this issue.
In closing, I asked Karina what her hope is for the future.
Having more on-the-ground interrogations of toxic masculinity, not just in our own spaces, but having there be some kind of treatment programs in places where we've seen this disease of colonialism and superiority be diminished, be worked through, and be understood that we all have our own contributing factors into making us work as a unit together. And in this work that we're doing and embarking on together, along with the collective of other amazing and brilliant Indigenous scholars that are on this project, it's an opportunity for us to heal ourselves, to heal the generations of trauma that our ancestors and particularly our women relatives have gone through. It's addressing that harm head on, and it's having those conversations, not just in a family sense, in a community sense, and holding space for all of that collective grief. Like, even if we want to think the most idealistically about what we want as an outcome to this, you know, it's really just harboring that resiliency that exists amongst us all when we're able to be open and grieve and heal collectively.
Thank you, Karina, for the work that you do. You just listened to Karina Bañuelos from the Sovereign Bodies Institute. While many researchers and coalitions are working hard to bring to light the epidemic of violence against Indigenous women, I can't help but think, if this epidemic is still invisible, then we must have our eyes, our ears, and our hearts shut tight. Everywhere, communities and individuals are fighting hard against these crimes. No legislation behind them, no police, no government, no justice. Consider the following statement by Alaskan Native Vera Starbard. It's narrated by Morningstar Gali.
The Native women of Alaska have been calling out to you. We've been asking for reformation in our laws, in our policies, in our system of justice. And when asking didn't work, we begged. We begged in letters, in person, in testimony. And when begging didn't work, we demanded. We demanded in marches, with our art, with voices raised in a chorus singing the same tragic song. We kept asking and begging and demanding past the point we knew you weren't listening.
Thank you, Morningstar, for sending us that quote in solidarity with Native Alaskan women and in solidarity with all who are in the struggle for visibility and justice. I know this was a lot of information to take in. For more information about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, you can visit www.sovereign-bodies.org. We know that the grieving is all around us, but we will bring it to the light and we will fight back against gender and sexual violence. This year and each year will be the Year of the Woman. Special thanks to co-producer Morningstar Gali, editing credit Free Will and Franklin and Mickey Mays, additional music credit to Roska D.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Invisible Epidemic, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. Our contributors this week were producers Sara Blanco and Morningstar Gali from Lujana Bajita. The music you heard included Forgotten by White Sand. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact me, your air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. Thank you for listening.
Benjamin, I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Today on Wings, Mayan Weaving Revival in Guatemala, following an era of genocidal repression against the indigenous people.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In a small town in Guatemala, indigenous Mayan women are reviving an ancient skill. Anna Catherine Brigida reports for Wings.
It's an overcast Tuesday afternoon in Santiago Zacatepeques, a small town about an hour from Guatemala City and a half hour from colonial tourist town Antigua. Of the roughly 30,000 residents, about 80% are indigenous Mayans from the Cachiquel community. Weaving has been part of their culture for centuries, but lately, fewer and fewer women know how to weave the traditional Mayan textiles.
No está bien el choco y tiene que volver a hacer.